Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and in this program we talk about the greatest medical and environmental threats to all life, such as nuclear weapons and nuclear power, global warming, ozone depletion, toxic pollution, deforestation, and many other social and political issues that relate to global well-being. So if you love this planet, keep listening.
Hello everybody, thanks for joining us again this week. Today we're going to hear a lecture given by Dr. Helen Caldicott, the presenter of this program, to the International Integrative Medical Conference held in Sydney, Australia on the 16th of October 2011. The speech begins with a short introduction and finishes with a couple of questions from the audience.
It's a great pleasure this morning to start off with a very special speaker, someone who I'm sure will be known to everyone, at least by name, if they haven't heard her already talk or haven't belonged to any of the organisations that she's managed to start around the world. Dr. Helen Caldicott has been described as the most influential anti-nuclear campaigner in the world. She's educated, inspired three generations about the medical consequences of nuclear power and nuclear weapons. She is an Australian paediatrician, a recipient of numerous awards, and co-founder of the Physicians for Social Responsibility, Women's Action for Nuclear Disarmament, and authored at least seven books. So welcome, Helen. We look forward to your talk.
Thank you very much for having me, and it's a very opportune time to talk to an Australian audience. I've just come off a four-week speaking tour of the United States, and things are very grim indeed. But we're amongst the grimmest of the nations, and there's no attention being paid to what we're up to. I'm going to walk you through the medical effects of the nuclear fuel cycle from A to Z, and stuff we didn't learn in medical school I'll talk to you about. Uranium, which we have 40% of the world's richest uranium, has two isotopes, 238 and 235. It's only this one that's fissionable, and it's present in 0.7% in our ore. It must be enriched to 3% for use in reactors, above 50%, and you've got bombs. That's why any country like Iran and many other countries that have uranium enrichment facilities can make bombs. Uranium decays through a series of daughters, one of which is radium, which Madame Curie refined. It's an alpha emitter. I'll go through that in a minute. Calcium analog, it induces osteogenic sarcoma or leukemia. Its half-life is over 1,000 years, I can't remember, but you multiply a half-life by 10 or 20 to get its total radiological life. It's around for a long time. Madame Curie died of aplastic anemia. She was so full of radium, they had to bury her body isolated from other areas. Her daughter died of leukemia as well. She used to walk around with a bit of radium in her pocket and play with it in the lab coat because she was so fascinated by it. Radon is a highly carcinogenic gas, an alpha, and is given off by uranium as men mine all the time. In fact, the National Cancer Institute, I think last week, produced a report to say radon is one of the most carcinogenic materials we know, particularly in smokers because they damage the cilia and it can't be cleaned out of the lung. There's another one called polonium, and if you remember that man Litvinenko who was dropped a little bit of polonium in his tea at Claridge's and he died of acute radiation illness. Do you remember seeing him? His hair fell out and he died of thrombocytopenia and massive hemorrhage and infection. So this is very dangerous, and that's another daughter. There are many daughters of uranium. Uranium-238 has a half-life of 4.5 billion years, and this is similarly long. And when men mine uranium, not only do these emitters be extruded from the uranium ore so men can inhale radon, in the past up to 50% of men who've mined uranium have died of lung cancer. They're not educated when they go down into Olympic Dam or Ranger. They don't know what the consequences are medically of mining uranium. They can ingest radium, which is very soluble, absorbed from the gut very readily, goes to bone inducing malignancy. And many of the daughters also emit gamma radiation. So there are four, basically four sorts of radiation. There are X-rays, and I must say I'm extremely alarmed that in America now they've got X-ray machines and you have to walk through them. So they're radiating fetuses, which are thousands of times more radiosensitive than adults. One X-ray to the pregnant abdomen doubles the incidence of leukemia in the child. Children are 10 to 20 times more radiosensitive. They're putting children through. I don't go through. I get a whole body pat down. It's very, very serious. Each dose you get adds your risk of getting cancer. It's cumulative. And if I ask Americans, hands up those who've never had an X-ray, there might be two hands that go up and I say, what, you've never had your teeth X-rayed? They get their teeth X-rayed every year. Absolutely, totally unnecessary. And we're the biggest irradiators of the public at the moment. And it's absolutely definitive that radiation, ionizing radiation, is a carcinogen. Then there's gamma radiation given off by these materials and various others I'll describe. Same as X-rays, you don't become radioactive. It just passes through you and mutates genes at the moment you're irradiated. Alpha radiation, which these materials emit, is particulate. It's composed of two protons and two neutrons emitted from an unstable atom. Doesn't travel far. You can hold uranium or plutonium in your hand, and it doesn't penetrate the dead layers of epidermis to damage living cells. However, if you inhale radon, for instance, it lands in a terminal bronchus, and the alpha particle travels a tiny distance, and it's terribly mutagenic. Most cells within that area, that volume, die, but as radiation decreases with the square of the distance on the periphery, some cells remain viable and become mutated. I was an expert witness in Karen Silkwood's trial. Do you remember Karen Silkwood, who was driving to the New York Times with data about plutonium and really aberrant practices at the plant? I saw her liver and heard the slide of the liver was just full of these tiny little stars, full of plutonium. And what the nuclear industry does, and they lie consistently, is they take a dose, say, from radium or plutonium in that tiny area, and they average that dose out over both lung fields and say the dose is minimal. So they don't understand radiobiology, or else they lie. And they actually, I've found, they lie consistently. If we lied in medicine, we'd be deregistered. It's inappropriate to lie today with science destroying the planet as it is, and we all know about that. Beta radiation is emitted too from an unstable atom, travels further. It's smaller, but it does the same thing. It mutates genes. Now, I don't have to walk you through mutagenesis and carcinogenesis, do I? That the incubation time for cancer is 5 to 60 years. Actually, it may be 2 to 70 years. And that's the ace up the sleeve of the industry, because I can't tell you how many journalists have said to me at the moment, well, no one's died from Fukushima. And they don't understand that people just don't drop dead. In fact, one man the other day, one of the workers, and there are 60,000 workers who've been handling these dreadful accidents at Fukushima, died of leukemia. One died of a heart attack. Heart attacks can be induced by radiation, and another one died. But you have to wait a while to die of acute radiation sickness. And we don't know. A lot of the workers, they have a transient. They come in and out. They're called nuclear sponges. And they're working in extremely high radiation levels. However, for the general population, the latent period of carcinogenesis is a long time. And no cancer identifies its origin. So when it arises, it doesn't say, I was made by some strontium 90 that passed through your milk when you were lactating and your baby drank it. From a Hershey's milk kiss. Why? Hershey's chocolates is 13 miles from Three Mile Island, and Three Mile Island had a massive meltdown. Huge amounts of radiation escaped. And I describe Three Mile Island meltdown in this book, and I got documents from a whistleblower from the Hershey's labs describing how they powdered the milk for 6 weeks until the I-131 decayed away to nothing, and then they used it for the milk. But I-131 wasn't the only isotope that got out. Huge amounts of other isotopes got out, which I'll describe in a minute. So radiation is cryptogenic, and it's a silent killer. And, you know, we worry about tobacco. Well, tobacco only kills the smoker. Yeah, passive smoking is bad, too, for babies. But this industry will induce malignancy, genetic disease, chromosomal aberrations for the rest of time. So this is the greatest public health hazard the world will ever see, and we are responsible for exporting uranium. We won't have nuclear power here because it's too dangerous for us. Notice what the politicians say? We just export the joys of a carcinogenic industry to the rest of the world. The uranium in the Fukushima reactors, which I'll describe in a minute, is Australian uranium. And no one, but no one is talking about it. There is a total lockdown on what is happening at Fukushima, and we're about to build the biggest uranium mine in the world in South Australia, thanks to Rann, who was a disciple of Don Dunson, who had turned in his grave, who knew what Rann was doing. So it's really so immoral, I can hardly talk about it as a physician. How many patients have I helped to die of cystic fibrosis, or children to die of leukemia? And yet when I talk about this, the industry will say to me, you're being emotional. So my answer is, if I have two parents in my office and I tell them their child has leukemia, and they show no emotional reaction, I get them a psychiatrist. It's inappropriate to be unemotional about an industry that will induce hundreds of thousands or millions of cases of cancer over the rest of time and random compulsory genetic engineering. Because not only are regulatory genes damaged by alpha radiation or beta or the like, and I won't go into that, but you will all understand that if a regulatory gene is damaged, the cell sits quietly for any time, 2 to 70 years, and instead of dividing by mitosis in a regulated fashion, it produces trillions of cells. So one alpha particle hitting a single gene in a single cell can kill you. And people don't understand that either. And you know, we can't stop cancer mostly, and cancer cells are very aggressive, invade blood vessels and lymph vessels. But the most important cells in the body, of course, are the sperm and eggs. And we all carry several hundred genes for disease, diabetes, cystic fibrosis, mostly all recessive, of course, maybe some sex-linked. I've just discovered I'm a carrier for a recessive gene, which really kind of freaks me out. But I suppose it's not unusual because we all do. But as we increase radiation in the background, we're going to increase the number of deleterious mutations for disease, and there are now 2,600 genetic diseases described. I will say that a report from the New York Academy of Sciences has just translated 5,000 articles from Russian, the Russian literature, into English. And now over 1 million people have died from the Chernobyl accident. When one stupid man did a stupid experiment in the middle of the night, the reactor exploded. 40% of the European landmass is currently radioactive, will be for hundreds, if not thousands of years. I do not eat European food because you can't taste, smell, or see isotopes in your food. They're invisible. And when the cancer arises, it does not denote its origin. But people are dying of cardiac disease. There's premature aging in the children. There's a very high incidence of cataracts. There's a high incidence of trisomies, Creutzfeldt-Jakob, Down syndrome and the like. There are homes full of teratogenitized children like thalidomide, and I will pass this round so you can have a look at these homes. This is absolutely new in the history of medicine except for thalidomide babies. Chromosomally normal, genetically normal fetus damaged by some plutonium or radiation that got in to kill a cell that's going to form the left arm or the right side of the brain or the like. And there are literally homes full of children like this. Very high incidence of diabetes, of hypothyroidism, of thyroid cancer, leukemia, and other cancers. All cancers can be induced by radiation. So I will pass this around. This is only 25 years hence, but this radiation hangs around for thousands of years, and I will now describe the isotopes that are hanging around in Europe. The International Atomic Energy Agency and the WHO, which have a binding agreement to say WHO can't investigate any atomic accidents unless the IAEA says it can, and the IAEA promotes nuclear power all around the world. This is probably the most important document in the history of medicine, and I've never seen a cover-up in medicine like this. First of all, I want to talk about depleted uranium. Hands up those who've heard of depleted uranium. Okay, depleted uranium is uranium-238. It's not depleted of radiation, but it's depleted of 235, which has been removed for use in reactors. Its half-life is 4.5 billion years. It's an alpha emitter. It's excreted. We used to use it a lot in medicine. To our detriment, it's excreted through the kidney. It causes acute nephritis. It causes renal carcinoma. It's excreted in the semen. And America in George I in 1991 used 360 tons of it near a town called Basra in Iraq. It's great stuff because it's 1.7 times more dense than lead. So this is used to make anti-tank shells, but other things too. And when it hits a tank, it slices through the tank's armor like a hot knife through butter. But 80% of it's pyrophoric, and it bursts into flame, producing tiny aerosolized particles less than 5 microns in diameter of respirable size to land in the terminal bronchi. A few years after they used this, quotes, ordnance, pediatricians noticed an increased incidence of childhood cancer. It has now gone up 700%. And because of the sanctions and the war, they can't treat the patients, and the patients die untreated. The incidence of severe anomalies like cyclops, anencephaly, phocomelia, and the like has gone up 700%. Women are too terrified to deliver their babies for fear of what will appear, and the doctors have told the women to stop having babies. In the cradle of civilization, where arithmetic began, law began, writing began, between the Euphrates and Tigris River, we have contaminated this area for the rest of time. They're using it in Afghanistan, and it's probably our uranium. Is there anything in the newspapers about this? No, it's all about Tony Abbott and Julia Gillard and talking about God knows what. But nothing important and imperative to the future of the human race. Okay, and this is good stuff because it's free, because it's radioactive waste. And they've used over 2,000 tons now. George II, he used it in Baghdad. There are 5 million people in Baghdad, half of whom are children, extremely radiosensitive. I, as a paediatrician, am deeply concerned about those children. Now, when uranium is mined, it's crushed into tiny little, very fine particles. And the nuclear industry consistently says uranium, right, is sustainable. I mean, nuclear power, clean, green. And they lie. At least the generals didn't lie when I debated with them about nuclear war, because they kind of knew a nuclear bomb dropping on New York would vaporize practically all the people. But the nuclear industry lies. In fact, huge amounts of fossil fuel are used to mine the uranium. Just go to Olympic Dam, watch them, trucks about as big as this room. Then to crush the ore, we use brown coal generated in South Australia, huge amounts of CO2. And then when the ore is crushed, it's called yellow cake, and it's transported by rail on a railway line built by Halliburton, and the CEO of Halliburton was Dick Cheney, who is a sociopath. And I'm going to write a book about him. And Rumsfeld. And it's going to be called Why Men Kill and Why Women Let Them, because I want to understand the etiology. And I think the etiology is located in the reptilian midbrain of some of these men who have a toxic reaction to testosterone. Anyway, so when the uranium is crushed, it's taken to Paducah, Kentucky. So that's where our uranium goes. And it's turned into uranium hexafluoride, which is a gas, which is passed through literally half a mile of nickel filters, tiny little holes. And you force the gas through. On one side stays 238, the other 235. And so over a series of cascades, you end up with 3% 235 to use in reactors. So this is very energy consuming. So in America, they use two 1,500 megawatt coal-fired plants to enrich the uranium. And they also use a lot of CFC gas, which is banned under the Montreal Protocol, as we know, because we're all getting melanomas and squamous and basal cell carcinomas from the UV radiation. But they've been, quotes, grandfathered out of the Montreal Protocol, and 93% of the CFC gas in America leaks from the Paducah, Kentucky uranium enrichment plant, and it's 10,000 to 20,000 times more potent as a heat trapper than CO2. But don't forget, nuclear power does not produce global warming. according to Zygmunt Switkowski. And he's Polish like I am, and I really despise the man. My name's actually Bronowski. Anyway, so that when it's enriched at great energy expense, it is then converted to little pellets like chalk, ceramic pellets, which are placed in long fuel rods, half an inch long, 12 feet long, made of zirconium. And they take along 100 tons of uranium to the reactor core, and they pack it into the core, 100 tons, like that, and immerse it in water. And there are moderating rods of boron, which moderate the flux of neutrons. And as they're slowly removed, the neutrons start breaking apart in a random fashion the heavy uranium atoms, producing 200 new isotopes, all of which are man-made and never existed before we fissioned uranium in order to make nuclear weapons. This creates tremendous heat of the type E equals mc squared. So we've captured the energy of the sun in these reactors. And the heat boils the water. When the water boils, the steam's taken off, which turns a turbine, which generates electricity. So all a nuclear power plant is designed to do is to boil water. It's like cutting a pound of butter with a chainsaw. And as Einstein said, nuclear power's a hell of a way to boil water. And when the first bomb blew up, named Trinity, after the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost in the desert, fancy calling a nuclear weapon Trinity, there was an outside possibility, according to physicists, that the whole atmosphere could be rendered critical, and we would be enveloped in one nuclear explosion. And they were actually in their trenches, the physicists, taking bets as to whether that would happen. If the bomb hadn't worked, the telegram to the president was to read, "It's a girl." So there's been sexism, profound sexism, in the nuclear industry and language ever since the beginning. The telegram telesent said, "It's a boy." And as Oppenheimer watched the bomb blow up, he realized what he'd captured, the energy of the stars. And he said, "I have become death, the destroyer of worlds," from the Bhagavad Gita. And he said, for the first time, physicists have known sin, and they've been sinning ever since. And we let them, because we're the ones who actually know physiologically what all this means. Anyway, each reactor needs 1 million gallons of water to keep it cool. And if you lose the power supply, as they did at Fukushima because of the earthquake, you can't keep the pumps running. So underneath at Fukushima, they had huge diesel generators the size of a house. But then in came the tsunami, the tidal wave, and it damaged these things. And so they couldn't circulate the water. The heat of these fission products, the intrinsic heat, is so intense that what happens is the uranium melts. And within 24 hours, three reactors, unit 1, 2, and 3, melted. Through the reactor vessel, which is 6 inches thick of solid steel, onto the bottom of the containment floor. At the same time, zirconium at 1,500 degrees centigrade reacts with water to form hydrogen. And there was a valve to let hydrogen out if this happened so it wouldn't explode like the Hindenburg. But to do it, open it, a man had to turn it 100 times, and it was so radioactive they couldn't get there. So hydrogen built up, and there was a massive hydrogen explosion, actually in 3 reactors and 4 cooling pools. Like the Hindenburg, which broke the containment vessel and allowed radioactive isotopes to leak out. The Japanese government didn't tell their people for 3 months that there'd been a meltdown. Now that's evil. And they also had a special thing to monitor the radiation going in various areas, but they didn't tell the people so they could escape, because they didn't want to, A, cause panic, or you mustn't cause panic in a population, like crying fire in a crowded theatre. That's antithetical to good PR and, you know, whatever. And they didn't want to get into trouble if they were wrong. And the Japanese are really, it's this sort of feudalistic society of ring bars and says they're sorry when they're really not. And the women don't do much, you know, but the women are really rising up now because their kids are living in highly radioactive areas. This uranium becomes 1 billion times more radioactive when it's fissioned. 1 billion times. And in each reactor is as much long-lived radiation as that produced by 1,000 Hiroshima-sized bombs. So the radiation we're dealing with is intense. And then on the top of the reactors are what are called swimming pools, euphemistically. They're the cooling pools where they take 30 tons of uranium out every year that's so packed with isotopes, it's so radioactive, and they're stacking them here. So there's much more radiation in the cooling pools than there is in the reactor themselves, and they all had explosions as well. It's antithetical to put cooling pools on the roofs of reactors, especially unit number 4 had just had all its fuel removed and placed in its cooling pool, so it's fresh, highly hot, highly radioactive fuel. If you stand next to one fuel rod for a couple of seconds, the gamma radiation being emitted will kill you within days. That's how hot it is, and thermally hot as well. So they must be continually cooled, and if they're not, they too have hydrogen explosions and meltdown. So unit 4, all of the fuel is in the fuel pool on top of a building that has been seriously damaged by an earthquake. Now, we all know there are aftershocks, and there continue to be aftershocks. And if there's a major earthquake, three things can happen. Cooling pool, unit number 4 will collapse. And if that collapses, I've got a family with young grandchildren in Boston. I'm flying them out straight away to Australia because the two air masses do not mix at the equator. So the fallout is only occurring up there. However, they've poured terabecquerels, trillions of becquerels, into the Pacific Ocean. And fish bioconcentrate radiation, like the algae bioconcentrated by orders of magnitude, crustaceans, little fish, big fish, and then us. And you can't taste in a salmon or a trout or whatever grows in the ocean radiation. You can't say, I can taste the cesium in this fish. Shucks. And fish swim thousands of miles, and currents go all around, especially in the Pacific, and we could easily be catching radioactive fish. The EPA in America, in its wisdom, has stopped testing the fish being caught, and they're not testing the fallout in America, and there's been a lot of fallout. Now, I'll just walk you through 4 of the elements, knowing that there are 200. Some last seconds, and I-129, for instance, its half-life is 17 million years. To give you an idea. So let's do I-131 first. You know about that, don't you? Its half-life is 8 days. It's around for about 10 weeks. And that's why they powdered the milk at Hershey's and used the milk for the chocolates. And you all know it's a gamma, and you know it's a beta, and it's very carcinogenic, particularly in children. And baby thyroids suck it up like little sponges, particularly fetuses. So they can be born as cretins, and in fact, in the Chernobyl, there are a lot of cretin babies and babies with microcephaly because the developing brain is very sensitive to radiation. Then there's strontium-90. Strontium-90 is a calcium analog like radium, goes to bone. Beta and gamma, half-life 30 years. So it's around for 600 years. Europe's covered with it. Cesium-137 is a potassium analog. So it causes brain tumours, rhabdomyosarcomas, it goes to testicles and ovaries where it's carcinogenic and mutates genes in the sperm and eggs. Half-life 28 years, so it's around 600. Now, much of Europe is covered with cesium-137, 40% of the landmass. I'm going to Turkey soon. Turkey got such a hell of a fallout from Chernobyl, they picked the radioactive tea, they drink a lot of tea in Turkey, and they sent it to Russia just to serve them right. But if you go into our health food shops, yeah, they're full of Turkish dried apricots, Turkish hazelnuts, Turkish dried tomatoes. Where are our lovely ditters, you know, dried apricots from South Australia? I said to my man in the health food shop, are these apricots radioactive? He said, well, they're organic. All food's organic anyway, so that's a stupid term for food. Stupid. All food's organic. But so I rang the man in Melbourne who tests the food coming in from Turkey and Europe. And I said, how do you test it? He said, well, we pick up random spot checks. And I said, well, how do you pick out which batches to check? Oh, he said, the computer does. And I said, well, what do you do when you find radioactive food? He said, we dilute it with non-radioactive food. The solution to pollution by dilution when it comes to radiation is fallacious because it reconcentrates back in the food chain and in our bodies. So you don't know if you're eating radioactive food. I look terribly carefully at the labels of the food when I buy. We can buy great olive oil in Australia, everything. We should be exporting non-radioactive food to a radioactive Europe. And not, we've got to stop exporting uranium. And that means you and me. Because we understand, and we've got to educate people, including Tony Abbott, who Penny kind of knows. Apparently he's quite a decent man one-to-one. But he's not, you know, anyway, I won't go into that. There are rats, there are wild boars in Germany so radioactive and full of cesium because they eat the truffles and the mushrooms that concentrate cesium, they almost glow in the dark. There are 360 farms in Cumbria and Wales whose lambs are so chock-a-block full of cesium-137, they have to close the farms down. And the government said you've got to close them down for about 100 years. No, it's not. It's 600 years. And the reindeer up in the Scandinavian countries are chock-a-block full of cesium because the lichen concentrates cesium-137. Last but not least, I'll talk about plutonium, which is why man fissioned uranium in the first place, 239. There are only two isotopes, basically, that are fissionable, this one and uranium-235. Well, 233 is, and then you get into thorium. Notice that Switkowski and other physicists who know nothing are talking about thorium now. If you want to read about thorium, it's in my book, but go to my website called Nuclear Free. Well, you can take my card and look it up, but there's a whole section on thorium. It's uneconomical and it won't work. But anyway, plutonium, great stuff. Each reactor manufactures 500 pounds of it a year. What's that, 250 kilos. I'm now in Australia, I better talk Australian. You need 5 kilos to make yourself an atomic bomb. You can find the design at the local hardware shop, and if you can steal a lump of plutonium the size of a grapefruit, you've got yourself a nuclear weapon, and plutonium's everywhere. Japan stockpiled 100 tonnes of plutonium. Its half-life is 24,400 years, but we only sell uranium to politically stable countries, right? You know? I mean, you wouldn't expect a country to become politically unstable within, you know, a generation or two, would you, really? Gaddafi's or George W's rising up, whose IQ is less than 100, or Reagan I met with for an hour and his IQ was 100 and he had impending Alzheimer's. I mean, you wouldn't expect people to do stupid things, would you, because we're infallible. So we only sell, according to Martin Ferguson, uranium. We're going to sell it to India, who has not signed the non-proliferation treaty, and India and Pakistan each have over 100 hydrogen bombs and could go to war any day or any night, because it's seen as a sort of, well, I wrote a book called Missile Envy, and it really is a Freudian thing. And if you look at the missile coming out with the two big balls of fire, that's actually what it is. And the generals in the Pentagon hated that book, but they all had one copy on their bookshelves. That's what it is. So anyway, we're selling nuclear weapons with impunity. Oh, but it's balance of payments, don't you know? And it's good for our economy. And mining's good for us. It's much worse than selling heroin. We are pushing, we're cancer pushers. We're pushers of random compulsory genetic engineering. We're pushers of nuclear weapons. And there is no attention paid to this in the media at all. That's why Karen, and Vicky and me, and we've all got to get on television wearing our white coats and our stethoscopes, and we have to talk about this and educate the Australian people about it. And you know what? They're good people, and they'll move. Now, plutonium's interesting. It's an iron analogue. It is not absorbed from the gut except in a neonatal gut whose gut is immature or in chlorinated water, which helps the absorption. However, it's absorbed, it's inhaled into the lung in powdered form, where it can cause, a millionth of a gram, a microgram is carcinogenic. But when they injected it into dogs, they didn't find a dose low enough that didn't give every dog cancer, 10 to the minus 9 grams. It's incredibly carcinogenic. It's transferred by macrophages to the mediastinal lymph glands, where it can cause lymphoma, stored in the liver, where it can cause liver cancer, bone cancer, leukemia, and multiple myeloma. It crosses the placenta. The placenta lets nothing past except plutonium, which it thinks is iron, where in the first trimester it can damage a cell that's going to cause teratogenic changes. And every male in the Northern Hemisphere has a tiny load of plutonium in his gonads next to the spermatogonia, the precursors of the sperm, where the genes are being mutated and passed on generation to generation. And if the man gets cremated, out goes the smoke with the plutonium so someone else can inhale it ad infinitum. And so you can see there's going to be an exponential increase in genetic disease, not just in humans, but all species, plants and animals. Yeah, it was radiation that induced evolution, but it takes billions of years for a fish to develop lungs, birds to develop wings, us to evolve with our brilliant neocortex, opposing thumbs, standing on our hind limbs. But now what we're doing is totally destroying the process of evolution, and we understand it. We understand Wooler's experiments with Drosophila fruit fly. We understand radiation biology and carcinogenesis. We understand, and yesterday someone was talking about the chemicals. We live in a constant cocktail of 80,000 chemicals in common use, most of which are not tested for carcinogenicity. It's up to us to prove they're unsafe, and the chemical companies don't have to prove a thing. And they launched them. I mean, I was in a hotel the other day, nice bin, and it smelled sort of nice, but I knew it was artificial perfume. And those perfumes, you know, some of them contain materials that are probably carcinogenic. And I write about the chemicals in this book, which is outside, plus global warming overpopulation. 200 years ago, there were 1 billion of us. Now there are 7. We're doomed. And we could easily stop overpopulation by educating women, providing them with contraceptions, and feeding them properly. Why aren't we doing it? Well, look who's running the world. Look at the politicians in America, totally out to lunch. I was in love with Obama when he was running. Now I can't even watch his photograph because he's totally into nuclear power and weapons. And look at our politicians. Julia Gillard wouldn't know, well, I won't use a rude expression, but she doesn't know anything about foreign affairs. And Martin Ferguson runs the energy policy, who is totally scientifically and medically illiterate and rude to the point of, I won't go into it. So we've got a lot of things to fix. So that's, I want to show you the slides of Fukushima, and then I'll just go into something else. Okay, so here are the reactors when normal. And didn't they look nice? Nice sort of blue and white spotted buildings. And that's what happened after the hydrogen explosions. 3. And this reactor, 2, 3. This one had MOX fuel in it, had plutonium mixed with uranium, which is terribly dangerous. So I've told you the toxicity of plutonium. Okay. The next one, look at this. And all that steam's radioactive. Every day, right now, 12,000 trillion becquerels of radiation are escaping into the atmosphere. A becquerel is a disintegration per second. 12,000 trillion becquerels. And there's nothing in our media about it. I must say, Murdoch, I think, is the most dangerous man in the world. Here's reactor one. Look at it. And that's an inside version of one of the reactors. And this is the fallout in March. So here's the reactor. 3 days, this is very high radiation, 3,000 rads. I mean, if you're exposed to that, you'd die within days or less. The LD50, when half the people die, is 250 rads. 6 days, and here's the west coast of the US, and now they've been picking up plutonium in Seattle, in British Columbia, the peaches in California are radioactive, but on the whole, the EPA is not properly testing. If you don't want to find out, don't test. And here's the way the radiation escaped. So this is the 18th of March. The accident was on the 11th. And this is Japan, and here it goes across to the US and Canada. This is only 3 days later, and it's spreading right across the US and over to Europe. And then on the 24th of March, it almost envelops the Northern Hemisphere. This is released by the Department of Energy. In America, they sent up a plane to measure the radiation, and they found that the radiation was 3 to 12.5 terabecquerels. I think that's what it is. And people were evacuated from Chernobyl at 500,000 becquerels, 500,000. And this is terabecquerels, that's trillions of becquerels. And people are still living in extremely radioactive areas, including 300,000 children. And instead of evacuating the children, and the Russians were much more proactive, they got the kids out, they've put radiation monitors around their necks, little pink ones. And so they're measuring, but all they're measuring is the gamma radiation, do you remember? They're not measuring the material that they're taking into their bodies, in their stomachs, their livers, their brains, their thyroids. You can't measure that unless you put people in a whole body counter and measure the spectrum of radiation that's being emitted from the various isotopes. Many of those children are destined to die or develop cancer. There will be hundreds of thousands of cancers developing now in Fukushima. And this is, I thought, an interesting picture, July 30th, not long after the accident. And this is kind of spring or early summer. The azaleas are all dead. And these are the ginkgos, look. That's radiation landing. Now, you can just imagine that's going to human bodies and what it's doing to the cells. I want to end with one other thing, which we are not aware of and it's not talked about. I don't know if you know, but we've still got 22,000 hydrogen bombs in the world. And Russia and America own 97% of them. And each Russia and America have about, America's got 12,000 targeted on Russia. Russia's got about 2,200 targeted on America, but not just America. We're targeted. We've got 34 US bases. All our cities are targeted. Japan's targeted. China's targeted by America. Since the Cold War ended, America decided to target China too, because they need a new enemy. And the Pentagon writes about this. And they're surrounding China with military bases, as I speak, in all the stans and all around in Japan and the like. Europe's targeted and England's targeted. Incidentally, if the Second World War was fought today, Europe would be uninhabitable for the rest of time because all the reactors, there are over 100 in Europe, they'd all melt down. So you can only have wars now in countries with no reactors, developing countries. And as the Pentagon has to have wars because it spends over $1 trillion a year on weapons. If you spend $1 million a minute since Jesus was born, you would have just spent $1 trillion. So America is a land of death, not life. And what its main production is weapons, and they export them. Now, how likely is this to happen? Well, I flew over the Dakotas the other day, and if you look down there, you can see the missile silos from the air with the roads connecting them. In each silo is one missile, and on each missile are 3 hydrogen bombs. And there are 2 men in each silo, aged 18 to 21, Pavlovian dogs. Yes, sir, no, sir, press the button, sir. Each armed with a pistol, one to shoot the other if one shows signs of deviant behaviour. Come on, think about it. Which one's likely to shoot first? The deviant one. I've talked to their girlfriends before they go down. Some of them take drugs before they go down. And they've got 2 locks 12 feet apart, so one man can't launch the missile alone, but they've worked out if they tie a string in one key, one man can turn both locks, initiate a nuclear war and the end of life on Earth. There are 40 H-bombs targeted on New York. Yet they have the gall to talk about terrorists. Who are the real terrorists? Who are the real rogue states threatening to destroy life on Earth? And their friends. We can't even talk about the communists these days. Russia and America are friends. They're trading. Russia's getting very rich. There are 60 targeted on Washington, D.C., 60 on Moscow. And how long would it take? After launch, the weapons take half an hour. In that time, the Russians pick up the attack they've launched. It's all over in an hour. 1 hour it takes. And what happens is if a bomb, where are we? We're in Sydney. And so we don't have the radio on to hear that we might be under a nuclear attack. We won't hear the weapon come in at 20 times the speed of sound. Sydney's targeted with at least one H-bomb, but probably many more. As I speak, it will land here and explode with a heat inside the centre of the sun, digging a hole 3/4 of a mile wide and 800 feet deep, turning us and the Earth below to radioactive fallout. 5 miles in all directions, including the dolphins, which I saw surfing this morning, will be vaporised. A little boy was reaching up into Hiroshima to catch a red dragonfly in his hand. against the blue sky, and there was a blinding flash, and he disappeared. And he left his shadow on the pavement, which is now in the Hiroshima Museum. 5 miles from here, everyone's vaporized with heat inside the center of the sun. 20 miles from here, in all directions, everyone has third-degree burns, people turning into missiles traveling at 100 miles an hour till they hit the nearest solid object. And then the whole area engulfed in a spontaneous holocaust of 3,000 square miles. And everything and everyone will burn. And as cities are full of oil refineries now and plastics and wood and you name it, and as all the cities burn, you only need 1,000 bombs dropping on 100 cities to create the situation, but it's many more that will happen. A huge cloud of toxic black radioactive smoke will rise up into the stratosphere and circle the Earth for up to 5 years, blocking out the sun. It will be cold, it will be dark, and it will be short ice age. And everything and everyone, excluding maybe the cockroaches and the algae, will freeze to death in the dark. How close do we get to this? We get close to this several times a year. In 1995, Yeltsin, who was a hardened alcoholic, a bottle of vodka before breakfast, Wernicke's encephalopathy, Korsakoff syndrome. The Americans launched a weather satellite off Norway, and they had informed the Kremlin, but the Kremlin lost the data. Fallibility. For the first time ever, they opened the football in Russia. Now, hands up those who know what the football is. Yeah. If you watch the president, always walking just behind him is an officer with a suitcase. And the suitcase has the codes to start a nuclear war, and the president is never without it. When Reagan was shot, they lost the football for 2 days. They didn't know where it was. For the first time in the history of the nuclear age, in 95, they opened the football. And there's Yeltsin sitting there with his officers over his shoulders saying, "Press the button, Mr. President." He had 3 minutes to decide. 3 seconds before that 3 minutes elapsed, the missile veered off course. And that's why we, you and I, are sitting here, and I'm standing in this lecture theatre. And that occurs quite a few times a year. You know the drones they're using to kill people by remote control? There's a place in Nevada where the people sit before consoles and the drones overhead in Afghanistan, they press a button and kill a wedding party. Those people are watching for the first time babies being torn to bits and body parts, because when people drop bombs, they fly over and never see it. They're having to have psychological counselling. But viruses have infected their system. Viruses are getting into the system to start a nuclear war. The Chinese are hacking into the systems. Geeks are hacking into the systems. A rising moon once nearly set off the system. A flock of geese, because the satellites pick up the shine of the missiles going through space. And I could go on much in much more detail. And we're part of this. It's probably our uranium in their bombs. And we are part of America, and we're allowing the Americans to come in and build more bases to our north so we can fight China with them. Now, you know, we like Americans, and I like them too because I'm there a lot, but you know what tough love is? When you've got a relative who you really love who is addicted to alcohol, you say, "Okay, Dad, I've found your vodka bottles in the umbrella stand, that's it. I'm taking you to a drying out centre." They need to be taken by us to a drying out centre. They need discipline. I like the Americans, but they're kind of gullible and they kind of don't know a lot except their own country. And we're smart. And why haven't we got the guts that the New Zealanders have had? You know? And it's time we rose up. And I believe that the only people who can really do this are us, because we have absolute credibility as doctors. No one can disagree with what we say because we have to be right on and have all our data at our fingertips. So I came here today really to try and encourage you as a wonderful organisation of doctors, and I think I'm going to join you, to stand up and lead the movement in Australia to stop uranium mining at Ranger, an Olympic dam, and we are about to become the world's radioactive waste dump. Mark my words, that Muckaty station almost certainly is going to receive 64,000 tonnes or so of American radioactive waste, a deal done between John Howard and George W., the second. The radioactive waste dump of the world over the Great Artesian Basin, we are in serious, serious trouble, and there is no discussion. So I welcome you to join, and I'll join you, I'm not sure how we'll do this, but education's the key, and the key is done through the media. And I'll finish by quoting President Jefferson, an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. And it's very easy for us to inform people, as we do with our patients. And just know that our planet, a beautiful planet, is in the intensive care unit. And all its systems are in jeopardy, reaching tipping point. Ozone, global warming, the oceans and the rivers, the nuclear power plants, the trees which we're chopping down. Trees trap carbon. It takes a tree 500 years to trap carbon. And we're chopping. You should go down to Bermagui. They're chopping them down everywhere. Koalas are in trouble. But apart from that, the one thing every country agreed upon in Copenhagen was to leave the trees intact. So we've got a lot of work to do. It's all biology. And just know that most of our politicians are biologically and medically illiterate. So it's up to us either to replace them. Karen should probably be Prime Minister. She'd be a good one. And it doesn't matter what party she's in. Why don't you infiltrate the Liberal Party, you know, and they, you know. Anyway, someone else did that. Yeah. But, yeah, we can all do that, but it's time we took over because we have to give the planet the same sort of dedication and responsibility we give our patients when we stay up all night with them. We took the Hippocratic Oath. That's why I do the work I do, because I'm practicing global preventive medicine. And the nuclear age could induce the end of life on the planet. Nuclear power will induce epidemics of disease for the rest of time that we can't cure and probably never will. But thank you very much for having me.
First of all, I'd like to personally and on behalf of the room welcome our newest member of AMA. Secondly, and I think thank you so much for this presentation. There's a couple of questions I want to ask, and the first one is the question that I'm often being asked by people when I tell them that you're coming to present at the AMA conference, and that is, what does this mean to our family holidays in Japan? They do. It gets down to basics. I want to take the kids skiing to Japan. Is that okay? With the next snowfall, will that make it safe to go skiing up in the north of Japan? They asked me that question.
What did you tell them?
Helen said Japan will never be safe to visit, but I want to hear that from you.
I didn't actually finish Fukushima. And I've been commissioned to write an article for the International Herald Tribune -New York Times for the end of the year, a big one, which we syndicate around the world, on nuclear power post-Fukushima. So three things could occur. There still could be a massive hydrogen explosion underneath those melted cores, and it's called corium, the molten lava. So if that happens, off it goes. There could be a massive steam explosion as it melts its way through the concrete floor into the underground water. There could be a massive earthquake which could precipitate one, both, or the collapse of Building 4. It's not over. They don't know how to bring it to a cold shutdown. They're saying it's cold shutdown, but it's not cold shut. They've never had to remove molten fuel like this ever. They can't get to the Chernobyl one because it's melted its way. It's melted through to China syndrome. It's right through the floor into the earth. So I can't see this accident ever ending. Nuclear accidents never end anyway because of the ground contamination and the contamination of the food for thousands of years. They never end. As for Japan, I wouldn't go near it. My brother, actually, he was a diplomat in Japan. He's going to go to Fukushima and interview the people for a book about how they're feeling. Well, number one... they're feeling really bad. Number two, they don't even know what's going on. Number three, half the rice grown in Japan is in the Fukushima prefecture, and it's coming in right now being harvested with cesium in it. The tea south of Japan has got cesium in it. The beef's got cesium in it. There's strontium being found in really hot spots in Tokyo.
So I would advise nobody to go to Japan, and I would say that this is going to be really the end of Japan's predominance in the world. And a new report's just come out from Sweden to show that babies in utero at the time of Chernobyl have a much lower than normal IQ and very inept at mathematical ability because the developing brain is so sensitive. Now, that's a very important study. One, two, Germany did a study, the government, looking at children under the age of five living around 16 reactors less than 5K. And they have more than double the incidence of leukemia and a high incidence of solid cancers. And the closer they live to the reactors, the higher the incidence of malignancy. Now, that's the German government. So this is a... And because reactors continuously release carbon-14, tritium I didn't even go into, which is a dangerous isotope, krypton, xenon, argon, they're called routine emissions. Like, you've just got a little bit of routine cancer in your breast, don't worry. Really, it's so dangerous to live around. And global warming is antithetical to nuclear power. The oceans are rising. Huge waves and storms are going to come in, which will damage the control rooms. There will be meltdowns. In France, it gets so hot, the rivers fall, so they don't have enough water to cool the reactors. They have to shut them down. And the rivers get so hot, the water's not cool enough, 1 million gallons a minute to cool their reactors. So all in all, the situation looks extremely grim. And yet the Australian people are not being taught those a modicum of intelligent discussion about what the future holds in terms of nuclear. And we're exporting uranium like there's no tomorrow, which there may well not be. That could be a bumper sticker on a car. Or I used to have a bumper sticker which said plutonium is thalidomide forever. But no, I would tell quite definitively your friends who are asking you, do not go to Japan.
Helen, is there any way to monitor personally? I mean, are Geiger counters available? Are they accurate? Is there any way we can empower people?
What do you want to monitor?
Gamma, alpha.
Do you want to monitor if you've been impacted?
Or the food, or...
Yeah,
particular
well,
products or particular geographical
alphas
areas.
Alphas don't give off gamma. Geiger counters only measure gamma. So they're measuring the children's thyroids with gamma, but they're not measuring the beta, and it's totally inadequate.
So what about things like, say, hair mineral testing, where you can look at particular elements?
Well, so what are you going to do if you find stuff?
Well, at least you can start monitoring where, you know, which the populations are affected.
Well, then what?
Well...
You can't
awareness.
Get the stuff out of people's yeah. bodies. There's nothing you can take to get rid of them. The Americans are ringing me. What food will I give my children? Where will we go? What can we eat? What can I give them? What supplements? Nothing. That's the ghastliness of it. And I think 2 days after the accident happened, I suddenly got it. I thought, Christ, this is going to go on forever. And it's absolutely irreversible. And like we've descended into Hades. No other industry produces this sort of scenario. No other industry.
Thanks for listening today. This is If You Love This Planet. You've just heard a lecture by Dr. Helen Caldicott, the presenter of this program, given to the International Integrative Medical Conference held in Sydney on the 16th of October 2011. Don't hesitate to go to our website to hear this lecture again or any of our other programs. That's ifyoulovethisplanet.org. Hope you can join us next week.
You've been listening to If You Love This Planet with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This program is broadcast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.